Madam Chairman and friends, in the course of these next 8 weeks, we shall be concerned every Friday evening with what is possibly the most important subject that we could, in fact, ever concern ourselves with. And not only shall we be concerned with this most important of all subjects, but we shall be concerned with it under what is its practically most important and most significant aspect. The subject with which we shall be concerned is the subject of man. That is to say, our subject is ourselves, not anything outside ourselves. Our subject is man. But we shall not be concerned simply with any merely general, any merely abstract idea of man. We shall be concerned very much with man in the concrete, man as he actually exists, man as he actually and also potentially lives and evolves and aspires. We shall not, in other words, be concerned with man as something static or something fixed or final or finished once and for all. We shall be concerned in the course of the coming weeks with man as developing, that is to say, as progressing from lower to higher and ever higher levels, degrees, grades of being and of consciousness. In other words, in the course of these lectures, we shall be concerned with the subject, that vitally important, that fundamental subject of human evolution. And especially shall we be concerned with what stands at the head of this whole course of lectures as their title, with the higher evolution of man. Now, most of the time we know we are occupied, very much occupied, only too much occupied, with external things. I'm quite sure that most of you, for most of this day, have been very much concerned with external things, concerned perhaps with household chores, concerned perhaps with other people, concerned perhaps with your jobs, concerned with all sorts of everyday material things, concerned perhaps to manipulate them, to use them, to utilize them. And I know that in some cases it has been not at all easy for you to get here, in fact, this evening. One gentleman I know almost staggered up the stairs and collapsed on the top landing, having had so much difficulty with the traffic. So we are very much occupied most of the time with external things, and we can't avoid this. It seems that this is an unavoidable part of modern living, at least in a place, in a city like London. So that we don't very often get time just to stop and to consider ourselves. We don't very often get the opportunity to just sit down, as it were, just be still, as it were, and take a look at ourselves, even to really feel our own existence. I wonder, for instance, how long it is since you had the opportunity, say, of sitting down in a room all by yourselves without anything in particular to do, no job, no duty, nothing to rush out after, and just be still there for as long as you wanted to be still, and just think and just be yourself. Someone once defined religion as what we do with our solitude. But nowadays, unfortunately, only too often, we don't have any solitude. and therefore also perhaps we don't have any religion. But in the course of these coming weeks, we shall be trying to do just this, just stopping, as it were, and considering ourselves, just stopping and studying ourselves. We shall be trying to see how far man has come in the evolutionary process, and how far we have yet to go. And in the course of these talks, while considering this subject of man, we should be very careful not to think of man as something distinct from ourselves. It seems as though quite a lot of the people who go along to lectures have a sort of gift, if not a positive genius, from, as it were, isolating themselves, not to say insulating themselves, from the subject matter of the lecture. In other words, they remain merely audience. If you talk about negative emotions, for instance, they will just think, well, lots of people have negative emotions, people out there. But they'll never think that I have negative emotions. They'll never say, well, the lecturer is talking about me, surely. No, they, as it were, isolate themselves, they insulate themselves from what is being said. It's purely objective. In a sense, it doesn't concern them. So even with regard to a subject like this, the subject of man, it's only too easy to sit back and hear a lecture about man as though it was a lecture about a being living on some other planet or some other star in some other galactic system billions upon millions of miles away, and never think that this is concerning me, that this is about me, that this is in fact me. We managed to put up such an effective screen between ourselves and what is being said, what we are hearing. We just look at it as it were drifting by, or flowing or floating by out there, but we never make the application, the personal application, to ourselves. So in the course of this series of talks, we must avoid at all costs doing this. We shall be talking about man. We shall be thinking about man. We shall be reflecting about man. But never must we think that we are reflecting, that we are thinking about some being external to ourselves. Our study is self-study. We're thinking, we're talking about ourselves all the time in the course of these talks. We should also be very careful not to divide ourselves, all of us here present this evening and other evenings, into speaker on the one hand and audience on the other, as though these are quite different. Some meetings you go to, you'll find that the speaker is up on a platform. This is the way lecture halls are designed. It's a practical thing so that everybody can see him. But the effect is to create a feeling of separation. Well, there is the lecturer up there, and there is the audience down there, and the lecture supposedly creates some sort of bridge. But often it isn't a very effective sort of bridge. It's more something, we may say, that emphasizes even the separateness, the distinctiveness of the speaker and of the audience. So we mustn't think that these two, speaker and audience, are really two different things, two different entities, two different sets of people. There is a distinction, obviously, of course, but at the same time, the two are inseparable. Sometimes I like to say that the relationship between the speaker and the audience is much more like that between the conductor and the orchestra. When you go along to hear a piece of music played, when you go along to a symphony concert, you realize that the music that you hear is the product jointly of the members of the orchestra and the conductor who is conducting them. So I very often feel that a lecture is like this, a sort of joint product. It's rather as though we had an orchestra, had an audience, that is to say, without any audience that was listening to the orchestra. Everybody is playing as well as listening. So this is what we should try to feel in the course of these talks. There may be just one person speaking, but that one person should function, or does function in a way, as the mouthpiece of the reflections of everybody present about themselves, that is to say, about man. Now, today, our reflections about ourselves must be rather wide-ranging. Tonight we have to cover a great deal of ground. Tonight we shall be dealing not only with evolution, lower and higher, which is our actual subject for this occasion, but also we shall be laying the groundwork for the whole series of these talks. And I therefore propose to divide this evening's lecture into three distinct parts. In the first part, we shall deal with evolution in general. In the second, we shall deal with the difference between the lower evolution and the higher evolution. And this, incidentally, will involve the working out, with the help of a diagram, of a sort of scale of evolutionary progress and development. And in the third part of the lecture, we'll just briefly indicate some of the different aspects of the higher evolution, aspects which will be covered at some length in subsequent lectures.